I'm generally thinking about people in Massachusetts, which is why it always blows my mind when, you know, I'll make a video about Market Basket closing in Billerica, Massachusetts, and like all of a sudden it's international news. Yeah. You know, that blows my mind that people outside. But I think it's because the Massachusetts stereotype is alive and well.
Right.
I think, you know, we have our own little culture and our little ways about us that are kind of silly and quirky, and people around the world just love the spectacle of it.
Hi again, everyone. I'm Jacob Feldman. Welcome to Take a Joke, the second season of our relaunched Sunday Long Read podcast. This is season two of what is a new version of the Sunday Long Read podcast, where we unpack captivating journalism themes over the course of four or five episodes each. This season is sponsored by Funny Girls, a program from the Harnish Foundation that uses improv education to strengthen girls' leadership skills. If you haven't already, check out our first season post-relaunch, which we talked about obituaries, and we're doing a hard left turn this time around. This season is all about humor, how to write funny, when to be funny, and when maybe not to try. My next guest has grappled with those questions and found a lot of the right answers, we think, and we're all better off for it, especially those of us who live in Boston, like me. You might have seen his TikTok in which he goes around Boston counting the number of Dunkin' Donuts, or maybe the one where he investigated the viral pain drain near City Hall. Matt Shearer is an Emmy-nominated and National Murrow Award-winning radio reporter for WBZ News Radio 1030. Matt, thanks so much for being with us.
Yes, thanks, Jacob. This is fun.
Oh, yeah. I'm really excited to have you. And as you may have caught in that last little bit of bio, I think there's a few fascinating things about just what your job is and how it's evolved. I mean, you're a video reporter for an AM radio station. You're a 36-year-old TikTok celebrity, to some at least in the Boston area. How did this all happen? Walk us through. When did you join WBZ in 2020? Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. My previous job had ended early in the pandemic, largely as a result of the pandemic. And WBZ called me up, and a few months afterwards, while I was, you know, I was chilling at home living off severance. It was a pretty nice summer then there in 2020,
been there as well,
just
sure.
sort of yeah. relaxing. Yeah. And they hit me up and they said, hey, we're looking for a new reporter. And it's something I had never done. I had a little bit of journalism adjacent experience, having worked in like political talk radio for a few years when I first got out of college. And they said, but you know what? You have a lot of experience. I was doing these sort of comedy bits on the street for a top 40 morning show for a long time. And so I'd go out and interview people and just try and do like silly bits and jokes and the kind of thing you hear.
What was the most successful bit from that period?
Well, let's see. So we did one where I would go hang outside of Fenway Park and I would ask Red Sox fans to read a script that was supposed to hype up Red Sox Nation. But midway through the script, it transitioned to a pro Yankees thing and would be like, I just want you to know that the Yankees aren't that bad. They're actually really cool guys. And like the guy, yeah, the Red Sox fans would flip out. Oh my gosh, they'd get mad. They'd be throwing things at me. And it made for really great, fun audio. So little things like that. And, so, you know, when BZ called me, they're like, okay, we already know you know how to get street interviews. You've got that down. You've done some work in the political world. So we think you could be a reporter. And I'm glad I took them up on it because it's been the best job I've ever had. You mentioned that I do video reporting, which I do. It started out, and I still do, audio reporting on the radio as well.
Yeah.
You know, they wanted to launch the WBZ TikTok account, which I always say I was a little bit hesitant about at first because I didn't want to just be, like you said, you know, a 36-year-old guy trying to fit in with the kids on social media. And the fact, and you know, we're a 102-year-old AM radio station too.
I mean, in one of the oldest cities in the country, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's not exactly easy to make us look cool. But I said, you know what? What we're already doing on the radio is exactly what these social media platforms are built around, which is telling compelling stories in like 45 seconds or less. So why don't we just take what we already do on the air and apply it to social media, which basically at the time meant taking our audio and slapping video on top of it and just putting it out there and seeing what happened. And then, you know, as we got better and better at it, I started getting a little bit more experimental and trying different things with, you know, the writing and the structure and the video. And it slowly started to take off. And I'm really glad it did, because it's opened up a whole new world of opportunities for myself and for the radio station. And like you mentioned in that introduction, I was just in New York City yesterday getting that National Murrow Award for Excellence in Innovation, which is really exciting.
Yeah, congratulations on that. And
thank you.
What was that? We can start there, because I was going to ask you that. What's that trip like? Like, are you explaining to people what you do? Does everybody kind of know what you do?
I'm used to explaining people what I do, because usually when I say, oh, I'm a news reporter, they say, oh, right. what kind of stories do you cover? And I'm like, well, there's a lot of Dunkin' Donuts basket in Boston. Exactly. Market Basket closed in Billerica. And they kind of give me a look like, oh, he's not a real reporter.
Yeah,
but that's all right. I'm like, go look at my Instagram or my TikToks, and you'll get it. I hope you get it. If you don't, then you're not the person that I'm making these for. Right. But so yeah, no, it was interesting being in a room. I mean, I remember sitting at the table while they were reading off some of the previous winners in the hard news categories, you know, like ever since the, you know, so-and-so investigated the abuse case in this book. And I'm just like, oh my goodness, they're about to announce me. And then this guy does silly videos on TikTok. Like, I'm going to be like the biggest clown there. So I kind of just embraced it. I filmed myself walking up to the stage to accept the award, took a selfie with the host, and it was, you know, it was a cool experience. There were a good amount of people in there who were already aware of what I was doing, which I think is really neat. Like, you know, the whole, it's not just Massachusetts that that is watching these videos. Kind of the whole world of journalism is kind of keeping their eyes on it, because they're like, well, how is it that this hundred something year old radio station is now, you know, getting the younger audience on board? One of my favorite comments that I ever got on TikTok was somebody saying, when did WBZ get cool? like my Amazing. Grandpa used to make me look at this, listen to this. And so, you know, it's fun to kind of be a part of that next generation. And, you know, being in that room at the Murrow Awards with all these people who do really amazing journalism, people who I've looked up to over the years, I was totally okay with being in that class clown role, I guess.
Yeah. And so let's talk about the evolution, but I also want to talk about that dichotomy or that tension there a little bit between, you know, quote unquote, hardcore old school journalism and what you've done. So you get there in 2020 that they task you with this job. Like, are you kind of the TikTok guy, the class clown guy in the newsroom from day one in the meetings? You know, like, here's a funny story, let's give it to Matt. Or how do you kind of develop that reputation within the office too?
Yeah, early on, I was doing a lot of general assignment stuff. You know, I'd wake up and go to wherever there was a press conference or a shooting or something like that. And I just kind of, but simultaneously doing some of the more offbeat, lighthearted stories. And I just made a commitment to myself. I'm going to show the newsroom that, like, this is what I do. This is what I bring to the table. You know, having come from that top 40 station doing sort of entertainment driven stuff, I was like, you know, I kind of want to continue that. I want to flex that this is what makes me stand out. Everything I do in life, I don't like to do it the same as everyone else. If I'm making a TikTok, I don't want it to look like every other video on TikTok or sound like it. If I'm being a reporter, I don't want to sound like every other reporter. So it's like, how can I kind of take something that already exists and turn it into something special, more unique and fun? And eventually the newsroom kind of caught on, and they were like, oh, and you know they started saying, oh, this sounds like a Matt story, or that, you know, that sounds like some nobody else in the newsroom is going to want,
is that a compliment,
cover or, this
know, what does that mean exactly?
I
know,
exactly. I think to some journalists it would be an insult,
right.
You know, for me it's a huge compliment. So I did.
And when did that start to happen? When did you first start to notice either the respect or the recognition or the success of this concept that you had?
So on the air it happened within a few months, and then on TikTok it took maybe, it's hard, I want to say about a year. It really was only within the last year from now that things have really blown up. You know, we've only been on TikTok for like 2.5 years now. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually pretty proud of that number. The fact that we've built up as much of a audience as we have in such a short amount of time is really cool. And without begging for it too. Mm-hmm. You know, those videos on social media where they're all like, oh, follow back, you know, like, subscribe. That's what they say on YouTube. But
right.
I don't like doing any of that, because I figure if I'm putting something out there. If it's good enough, people will follow back. You know, you don't need to beg them to do it. And please help me out. I'm trying to make a career out of this.
Right.
No, that's not fun. You know, we're trying to be fun and we want to give people something that, you know, they'll want to come back to. That's how you grow an audience. If you just put stuff out there that's consistently good and interesting and stands out from the pack, then people are going to say, oh, okay, I want more of this, and they'll follow. But I say that like I have all the answers. I don't. I don't know everything about social media, and you know, we're all victims to the algorithm in certain ways. The algorithm is our worst enemy when a video doesn't do well, and then it's our, you know, but we pretend like it doesn't exist when a video does do well. So I don't know. It's all just an experiment. This, you know, getting back to the point of your original question, when did I start to see all this stuff? I mean, I guess I feel like it's an ongoing project. You know, it's like an ongoing thing where I'm still trying to do different things with the videos that I make and trying to have fun and seeing what happens.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, working at WBZ, and I'm curious how that impacts the stories you choose to do and the way you do them. Like, are there things that are, you know, funny, but you know, just wouldn't be a fit given that this is also a professional news organization, that so you say, you know, we just can't do that, even though it would be a good TikTok video?
Yeah, that's definitely on my mind. Because obviously it's kind of like the wild, wild west on social media where there are no rules. But as a radio station, we still kind of have to think about the FCC rules. And so, you know, I can't be too gross or too lewd, or I can't, you know, I have to beep out all my swears and everything. But that's just kind of good practice for social media anyways. I feel like people tend to bleep themselves out these days just because they don't want the algorithm to slow their video down. But there have been some things, interestingly, that work well on the radio but don't fly on social media, like the other way around. Like, for example, cannabis content. Like, recreational cannabis is completely legal here in Massachusetts, but on TikTok, if you have any mention of it, the video will get blocked for terms of service violation. Yeah, so it's crazy too, because there are so many news stories around the cannabis industry here.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm not always super eager to do them, to be honest, because the cannabis industry takes itself very seriously, which, understandably so. At the same time, I'm trying to have fun and joke around and make silly videos. And, you know, I want to talk to people who are willing to joke around with me. Mm-hmm. Characters are really important.
Right. Absolutely. Let's talk a little more about that process, starting with ideation. Like, do you have a list of 100 ideas that you're constantly going back to? Or is it, you know, you get into the office or you wake up and you're like, all right, shoot, what am I going to go do today?
It started out more of the latter. And I would have I'd work with the editors to kind of come up with something, you know, based on what's the news of the day, what's going on. But a lot of the videos I make are very evergreen. So yeah, I have a running list right now. I just pulled it up. I don't know how many. Yeah, it's got to be close to like 100 ideas that I have, and I'll dip into those. And every day I try to come up with a new one. We have assignment meetings with all the reporters every day where we go over what are the big stories, who's working on what. And then each reporter throws out a pitch for like a new idea that we've had. And each time I try to come up with an idea that I don't think anyone else will have ever thought of. And, you know, for good reason, usually. It's just something that maybe only I could do. And I'll put it out there. And a lot of times there will be like, okay, whatever you say, Matt, I don't really see the vision, but go for it. And they don't say that, but I can kind of feel it. I can tell. And they don't see it. And that motivates me. That gets me all fired up to be like, all right, now I'm going to go out and make a kick-ass video. Mm-hmm. And I don't always accomplish that, but I try.
And so what is step one when you're like, all right, this is what I'm going to go do today? Is it picking a location? Is it, do you kind of put questions together ahead of time? What's the process?
It's kind of different depending on what the story is. You know, a lot of times it depends on booking an interview. If that's the case, then I need to do that, book the interview. If not, if it's just kind of like a getting reaction from people out on the street, I just kind of go. Try not to over plan things, because to me, the magic is in the unexpected and just sort of what happens out there. You know, when I put a microphone in someone's face and they say something that I never could come up with on my own, or I never would have expected, or the video just takes a really weird turn. Like, I do this little series where I go to small towns and try to find something cool. You know, like that's the whole thing. And, you know, people in the comments are always getting chirpy, like, why didn't you go to this historic location? And I'm like, because that's not the point. Right. The point is, like, I'm not doing a profile on your town. I'm going there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just trying to see where the adventure takes me and who I meet. And so often I end up meeting these people who take me on these just ridiculous side quests, and that's hilarious to me. it's fun, it's adventurous. I don't know where the day is gonna go, and then, you know, then I have to go home and actually sit down and listen to all the hours worth of audio that I just captured and sum it up in like a 1.5 minute long video.
this is something I wanted to ask about, because this is something every reporter deals with in their own way of, you know, all right, when am I done interviewing, when is a good time to go back and figure out what I have and put it together. How do you know? Like, you just, is it just when the sun goes down, or do you limit yourself to a couple hours? How do you decide when you have enough tape?
It's tricky because I do have two kids at home, and so I have like responsibilities there. I can't just, you know, give up tons of extra hours of time, but I do like to stay out until I really feel like I have a lot of great audio. I'm like making mental notes as I interview people. Ooh, that clip would be great. That clip would be great. And then once I think I have enough, I keep going for another, you know, half hour or so, just to make sure. Because so often I've been out there, I've been like, oh, I have all these great clips. And I sit down and I think, oh, that wasn't that funny, or this isn't enough for a whole video. And sometimes I've had to go back out to a location and get more. And yeah, it adds time, but I definitely think it's worth it. You know, the newsroom is really generous and understanding that, like, I have this kind of process, and you know, there are other reporters that are covering stories that are more topical and timely and need to be filed within minutes of them starting to record, or sometimes even going live. I've done all of that too. But, you know, with the videos that I'm putting up on social media, I personally hold them to a certain standard where I don't want to put anything out just for the sake of putting out a video. That kind of gets into a whole territory that I've ranted about before, which is I don't like the term content creator, because it just makes it sound like you're trying to just fill space for the sake of filling space.
Yeah.
I want to put something up there if I actually feel like I have something worthwhile, worth people's time, you know?
So what word would you rather people use?
I don't know. That's a hard question, because everyone does something different on the platform. Like, I, you know, I'm a reporter, but there are people who are comedians on TikTok and people who are sketch comedy artists or writers. I don't know. For me, it's kind of, calling it content creator just kind of sucks the art out of
the
it.
The life out of it.
Totally. What we're doing there is like making videos is an art form, and like writing is an art form. Telling jokes is an art form. Content creating is something that a bunch of marketing dudes in a boardroom with suits and ties came up with to make their brand look cool. And that's not what we're trying to do here.
Yeah. What is the team like behind your videos? Is anybody else taking a look at it before it goes? Are you getting notes? Are you getting edits?
It's pretty much me. I do it all, record, edit, post. And, you know, I'm lucky that the station kind of believes in what I'm doing in that way. They trust me. But we do have my boss Jay kind of overseeing everything, and he at the end of the day is sort of the guy who everyone runs their videos through, and he just because we had a period of time where we had a bunch of different reporters posting, and everyone wanted to post like at the same time on the same day, and there were some videos getting posted within like 5 minutes of each other, and the algorithm was punishing us for that. So we all kind of had to step back and, you know, let one guy be in charge, but he's really great about just kind of trusting my judgment.
Yeah. And you talked a little plenty about the, you know, the algorithm and the vagaries of that. And I'm sure that's something that, I don't know, keeps you up at night, but makes you fret from time to time. I'm curious how you evaluate the stories you're doing. Like, are there certain numbers, metrics that you're looking for? Is there a certain, you know, level of feedback that you're interested in? Or is it a matter of, you know, I did as best I could on this and I'm just turning the page to the next one?
Yeah. What I care mostly about is just kind of putting out something that like I would want to enjoy and I would want to watch. And if it does well, great. I don't get me wrong, I definitely watch those views numbers and I hope that they're high, but because, you know, why? You're going to put hours of work into something, you want people to see it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'd be lying if I said I didn't care about that a little bit. But also on like an artistic level, like I try not to worry myself with it too much. I try not to say, okay, well, this thing I did last time worked, I'm going to do that again. Because then what you end up doing is just making the same video over and over. And we see those people on social media, right? They have one viral video, one joke, and they just do it over and over and over again until people get sick of them and no one's watching anymore. And I don't want to do that at all. I kind of always want to be trying something different and, and seeing what works. And it's failed spectacularly before. I did a video one time where it was a news report, but rather than actually just tell the story, I sang the whole story. Like,
really? I missed this one.
Yeah. Oh, well, you didn't see it because it didn't do very well. It was a huge failure. And it wasn't a huge failure. And
it was a learning lesson, right?
It was average. But there was also a greater purpose to me doing it because, like, the few videos I had done before that, I didn't really feel like I felt like I was almost in like a writer's block where I was just kind of going through the motions and doing these videos that were fine, but didn't really push myself. So I was like, I'm going to do something way out of left field now and, you know, sing the news report. And I'm not a singer. I'm a terrible singer. And so it was cringy. It was cursed. It was all those words that you read about on Urban Dictionary. But again, it got me out of my funk and it brought me back to just making videos and having fun for the sake of making videos and having fun.
I have seen you singing on a couple, though. I know there was one about the smallest bar in Boston. I think you laid down a couple chords in that video. So you've broken it out a couple times. It's not something you've totally gotten rid of, huh?
I do play music, I play a number of instruments. Singing is not one of them, but I've played in bands over the years. Gotcha. And so I try to, whenever I can, bring in any other random little skill that I have, just to kind of play all my cards and, you know, do something that I don't think any other reporter would try to do. Like I've skateboarded in videos before. I grew up skateboarding and I've snowboarded. I did an interview with somebody while going like 40 miles an hour down a hill. So like, yeah, just trying to play as many cards as I can.
This season of the SLR podcast is supported by our publisher, Ruth Ann Harnish. And we're excited to tell you about another great thing she's a part of. It's called Funny Girls, and it helps 3rd through 8th graders as they figure out all the challenges they're navigating. To do so, Funny Girls uses improv exercises, lighthearted activities that actually contain important lessons in leadership. The kids have a lot of laughs, but they also learn how to think on their feet, how to come up with creative ideas, and how to recognize their own abilities. Kelly Clarkson featured Funny Girls on her show. You can just Google Kelly Clarkson Funny Girls and you can see the whole thing. Have a potential eligible student in your life or just want to know more? Visit www.funnygirls.org. That's www.funnygirls.org. Thanks again to Ruth Ann for her support of Young Women, this show, and the Sunday Long Read. Some of these videos show you getting recognized sometimes at the end of the video, sometimes in the middle. How often does that happen? And is that frustrating or what's your reaction when someone knows what you're up to and kind of recognizes you in the wild?
It's great. I mean, I love it. It's, you know, who wouldn't want somebody coming up to you on the street and saying like, hey, I really like the work that you do. You're really good at your job. You know, not everybody in the world gets that. And so I'm really, really appreciative. And the fact that I do this again, almost, you know, in large part for my own amusement, but for other people's too. And the fact that people give you that feedback in real time on the street, And I do think it's nice to slip that into a video every once in a while. It happens a lot more often than is caught on tape or, you know, makes the final cut. Yeah. I mean, an example is just last week I was at a Renaissance fair, King Richard's fair here in Massachusetts. And I happened to meet up with another big TikToker guy. And so he ended up coming around with me and doing the video with me. And like the whole time between the two of us, we couldn't walk like 10 feet without people coming over to say hi, ask for pictures, which is great. It was, you know, in retrospect, when I got back and listened back to the audio, it was a little distracting because I had I didn't get quite as much audio as I had hoped to, but you know, that's fine. It's worth it, you know, to be able to meet people like that. And how often does it happen just in Boston? I mean, every time I go out to record, somebody comes up to say hi, at least one person, sometimes multiple. And that's really awesome. It's funny. We took the kids up to this amusement park in New Hampshire over the summer, and my wife was like, I wonder if people are going to recognize you at the theme park. I said, no way. We're like 3 hours north of Boston. There's no, I only get recognized in Massachusetts. And like, we got recognized like three or four times throughout the park. And then even just this past weekend in New York, when we were there for the Murrow Awards, obviously, you know, people from the industry said hi, but like we went out to Times Square to shoot a little video, which I'll post later this week. And I said to my boss, this will be nice because it's not Boston. People won't know who I am. I can just film freely. And one person did recognize me. It was like the last person I expected to. It was a dude.
Yeah.
No, he was from Seattle. That's the crazy thing. Just visiting New York City, but happens to be aware of what I'm doing on TikTok. And he happened to be wearing a full-on furry fursuit too, which again, I did not expect, but it's great. I think the fact that everybody from all walks of life are watching these videos.
Yeah, I was going to ask, you mentioned, you know, coming across another TikToker, I won't say content creator. And this is maybe I'm curious how much you talk about this in the newsroom as well, but this idea of like man on the street, like everyone now is holding up their phones and doing bits and like recording people and going up to strangers and asking them questions for videos. And, you know, there's this whole genre of, you know, tiny mic interviews. I'm sure you've seen those a million times on TikTok too. Like, I'm curious how you feel about this, like how journalists feel about this trend or how that affects your job, that there are people, you know, you can just be walking down the street now and see four of these people, depending on where you live, how that's kind of evolved, how you're thinking about separating what you do and just how much you're thinking about that this trend of man on the street or woman on the street becoming like a genre to itself. Yeah.
It's funny because I don't think everybody realizes how difficult it is to do person on the street interviews. I think to be, you know, it's like, it takes a lot of time to actually get interviews that are kind of worthwhile and worth sharing. That's a big thing. It's like, I don't want to just play everybody that I interview and play like, you know, if they kind of have like a boring response to what I'm playing. I want somebody who's going to say something, like I said before, that I never could come up with on my own or is like really interesting and worth people's time, because we're not just competing against other radio stations right now or other news stations. We're competing for people's attention against like every other possible thing they could Candy be doing Crush, with their time in the world. Which is now you have the world at your fingertips in your pockets on your cell phone, smartphone. Yeah. Candy Crush, like you said, or even Wordle or like, you know, Netflix on your phone, whatever it may be. So I got to make sure that like, if I'm putting a video out there that like, it's genuinely worth people's time. And, you know, I think there are a lot of people who are experimenting and just trying to do the person on the street thing. And, you know, they're just getting the hang of it, and it's good to experiment and try, and, you know, not everything's going to work, but, also, there are a lot of people who are putting stuff out there that's I don't think any good, or maybe is kind of predatory, the way people like approach random strangers on the street and start filming without their permission and stuff. And like, that's not cool. Like for me, with everybody I talk to, I make it clear I'm recording this to broadcast it on WBZ News Radio, and I'm making a video to go along with it on the web. Is that okay?
What's your not pickup line? What's your line when you interrupt somebody, when you walk up to somebody on the street? What do you say to them?
I'll start with, hey, can I talk to you on the radio real quick? And, you know, they'll usually say yes. And then I'll tell them, and is it okay if I film a video too for social media? Because for me, the priority is to get the audio for the radio, because that's how I really make the money. And then, you know, after that, if I can get them to be in my video too, that's great. And, you know, a lot of times they'll say yes, a lot of times they'll say no, and that's fine. And you just kind of got to move on to the next person. I find that younger people are more excited about the idea of being in a TikTok video. You know, it's like back in the day, when you and I were growing up, the idea of like being on TV,
you'd see the TV
was
truck
so
outside
exciting
the local restaurant and you'd go there and try to,
But now it's like, if you tell someone under the age of 22, like, hey, do you want to be on a TikTok? They're like, oh, I could be on TikTok? quickly. You know, it's like, yeah, which is funny. Because anyone can be on TikTok like right now if you want to be. But you know, to be in like a big TikTok, I think is exciting for them.
And I'm curious how much you think about yourself as a local reporter versus, you know, somebody who's doing these videos about Boston that, as you mentioned, are now watched around the country, surely around the world. Like, do you think of your audience as people in Boston, or are you thinking about people who may be viewing this outside of Massachusetts?
Yeah, that's a great question. No, I'm generally thinking about people in Massachusetts, which is why it always blows my mind when, you know, I'll make a video about Market Basket closing in Billerica, Massachusetts, and like all of a sudden it's international news, you know? For years, Billerica was like the capital of Market Basketchusetts. They had one on Boston Road, another one on Boston Road, and also one on Boston Road. But now the one on Boston Road is closed as the landlord won't renew the lease.
I actually cried, and I cried walking down the aisles last week.
That blows my mind that people outside. But I think it's because the Massachusetts stereotype is alive and well.
Right.
I think, you know, we have our own little culture and our little ways about us that are kind of silly and quirky, and people around the world just love the spectacle of it. And, but I think if I were trying to make videos that were so mass appealing, then they wouldn't really appeal to anyone.
Mass is in everybody, it's better to not focus. Massachusetts.
Yeah. It's kind of, exactly. It's kind of focus. It's kind of better to focus on like this niche little community.
Right. Well, because you mentioned one joke TikTok accounts. There's plenty that just make fun of Boston accents, and those get like millions of views every time. But you could go around, ask people to say your name, ask people to say whatever, and probably, you know, make a decent account off that. But I think the fact that you're focusing on news pegs of some kind, even if they're not traditional news pegs, that would be covered by other reporters, does kind of lend an authenticity or you know, a depth to the reporting that you're doing.
Thank you. Yeah. And hey, you know, more power to those people. If they're able to get, you know, what they want out of the Boston accent videos and stuff, cool. You know, I'm glad that they're able to do that. That's just not for me. Like, do I have a lot of Boston accents in my videos? Right. Yes, but they're authentic. You know, I'm not putting it on myself. I've lived here in Massachusetts my entire life and I don't have the accent. Like, it comes out from time to time. In fact, it was when I was at King Richard's Fair with that other TikToker where we were walking around, occasionally he'd just start laughing and I'd be like, what? And he'd be like, you just said something with a Boston accent. I didn't even notice that. But yeah, so I'm not going to try to put it on just to, you know, because again, authenticity, like you said, I think is so important. You know, I think people can tell when someone's being not authentic. But then again, I say that and then I see videos on TikTok that are so clearly staged or faked and everyone falls for it. And I'm like, what are you guys? Are we watching the same video here? I don't like to stage stuff. I you know, I'm a news reporter. I gotta just bring the reality. Cause to me, reality is so much funnier than anything that, you know, you could make up.
Yeah.
You know, like the fact that like these characters exist in this world and these situations and these places that you can go to, it's funny. And again, I also want to be clear too. I know this is a podcast about like comedy and stuff, but like not every video I do is meant to be like funny. And I'll give you an example of that. There was a guy I interviewed, and this is one that I went into thinking this has potential to be funny. There's a guy who drives around Lowell, Massachusetts in a Power Wheels car, like one of those tiny little cars that kids have, the battery powered things. He drives around town, and you know, going into it, I didn't really know much of his story. There are all these viral videos of him just driving down the sidewalk and people giggling. And I thought, okay, this could either be like a guy with a sense of humor who's doing it to, you know, entertain people, or someone who's going through something. And it turned out to be the latter. But fixing up the ride isn't just out of necessity. It's become his passion.
That's what could put a speaker in here.
Yeah, that one has a radio. The speaker is a voltmeter.
He's even upgraded the tires, the lights, is working on an alarm system. He's going through hard times. His license is suspended. He works double shifts to make ends meet and can barely pay the bills. And like, it's all like really sad and serious. So like, yeah, I acknowledged kind of the quirkiness of it and showing that, you know, people in town love what he does and love to see him around. But also, you know, let's not just use this guy as a punching bag here. Like, he's a real human being with a real story, and let's share it in a way that's respectful and honest.
No, I'm glad you brought that up. How was that received? Was it received the way you expected?
it was received really well. The video did really well. Tons of people in Lowell were like, oh my gosh, I see this guy all over the place. Thanks for telling the story. Now I know his name, stuff like that. And there were people even stepping in to be like, can we set up a GoFundMe to help this guy? Which, you know, that's really cool. It's nice when you can kind of make a difference like that. And not just by bringing back the potato skins to the 99, which I have done before, the 99 right. restaurant yeah. here in yeah. Massachusetts.
Along those lines, like, how much are you getting pitched by businesses, by people who want to be featured in one of your stories?
Constantly. I feel bad because I just can't get back to all their emails. It would take up my whole day. But yeah, it's the PR agencies, marketing people, even the business owners themselves reaching out. And, you know, it's tough because like some of them seem like genuinely great people, and I love supporting small local business and everything. But I also have to kind of keep in mind, like, you know, I gotta highlight the businesses that are really truly unique and stand out. I can't just be, hey, come do a story about my pizza place. We make really good pizza. It's like, well, every town has like 12 pizza places that make really good pizza. You know, what's different about yours? Oh, you sell pizza with, you know, 14 karat gold flakes on top. Cool. That I'll do a story on. And that actually was a real story that I did in Southie. And I took the pizza to a cash for gold place and they verified, yes, it's real gold. So that was cool.
Amazing.
Yeah.
We've talked a little bit about how unique Boston is. Like, is this a model that you think other cities our size, that, you know, there's room for a reporter to be doing these kinds of stories?
I'm already seeing that. And I'm hearing from people too. People hit me up and say, hey, you know, I was thinking of doing something similar to what you do in my city. And that's all cool and fine. I think as long as people are being authentic to themselves and bringing whatever they can bring to the table that, you know, is different and that I can, cause like, even I try not to make videos like myself, you know, like each time I try to do it a little different or do something I've never done before. And I think it's important for people to continue to kind of elevate, push the bar, you know, a little bit rather than, just try to do something that someone else is doing because that's what works, you know? I don't know. I don't necessarily think that what I do specifically could work in every city, but I definitely see other people, just kind of focusing on their little communities and the people that make the towns and the, you know, everything great. And I think it's great to see.
Along those lines, I'm curious where you get inspiration from as you're, you know, I don't know if you've even counted how many you've done, but as you're trying to think about new ways to attack this or new ways to be interesting and dynamic and funny, like even whether it's people who are doing similar things to you or very different, are you looking for inspiration from anywhere specific?
Not really. I'm just trying to come up with something that, even if it's just like a subtle thing, like a subtle video editing thing that I've never done before, just try, I don't know, trying to do some, like, I'll tell you a video that I'm going to be posting later today, which will be irrelevant by the time this podcast gets posted. But, there's a new app I discovered online that's like Airbnb for bathrooms. So like if you're out and about and you got really got to go, you can open up this app and just like go in a stranger's house, which is to me hilarious on so many levels. Like, first of all, who's going to let a stranger into their house?
What do they charge?
Second of all, who's going to go on a stranger? I think you can set the price like Airbnb, right? I mean, $5 I think is reasonable. Right, I don't know. So
there should be probably two tiers, depending on kind of the use case.
Exactly. Depending on how, is it a full bathroom? Can I take a shower while I'm there? Like, what am I going to do? So I went and I just knocked on strangers' doors around Boston and was like, can I use your bathroom? And
how'd that go?
You know, that's, some people were into it. Some people weren't. I was actually surprised though, at how many people were like willing to do it. But what I learned is that, you know, I had the microphone that kind of gave me a little bit of, you know, they all, it was almost like they knew who I was.
Right. You got to have to go like secret camera to really do a full test. Right. Yeah.
I know. Well, I need to put on one of those like Groucho Marx masks with the big eyes and mustache and big nose to go to really be in disguise. Yeah. But no, it was fun. And I'm looking forward to putting that video out there. Awesome.
Well, I've got one last question for you. And I'm really glad we're making the transition from Airbnb for bathrooms to this. But as I'm sure you know, local news is going through rough times. It's been a couple rough decades for local newspapers and local reporters, and it's harder than ever to get ad dollars, to get readers, as we were talking about, you know, to get young readers in particular. I'm curious to know what your success with this ongoing project has taught you, both when you're on the street and when you're getting feedback from the videos you're putting out about people's feelings towards local news.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I think I'm trying to think of the best way to word this. First and foremost, I want to say, you know, one thing we have to realize in these traditional newsrooms, like be it radio, television, or newspaper, is that young people especially are getting their news from social media, whether we like it or not. And if that's the case, we need to be there on social media to just from an ethical standpoint to ensure that the news that they're getting is coming from like a credible source and like a legitimate newsroom that really checks their sources, checks their facts, and vets everything. You know, not that that necessarily applies to Airbnb for bathrooms, but like, I mean, I certainly vetted to make sure that was a real app and everything. But like for more serious stories, I think, you know, if you're going to see a video going around like this horrible, horrible situation going on between Israel and Palestine right now, you know, you want to make sure that the source posting it is legitimate. You know, just think about how often videos get circulating around being like, oh my gosh, look, this is the streets of Chicago right now. It's like on fire. And it's like, well, that was actually a protest in the Middle East from like right, 5 years ago.
Yeah,
100%. So, you know, it's important to check your sources. It's important for all of us to be there. And it doesn't necessarily mean we need to completely ignore our heritage operations because, you know, like us, for example, at WBZ, we're using social media as an opportunity to introduce people to WBZ who wouldn't already know about it and tell them, like I end every video with, ask Alexa to play WBZ News Radio on iHeartRadio. You know, if you want more on this story, and hopefully that inspires some people to actually, and we know it has, it's been inspiring people to check out our radio station. Yeah. You know, our, you know, we can see, you know, with the ratings, the breakdown of the demographics of who's listening. And since we started this little project, our younger listeners have gone way up, the amount of younger listeners that we have. So it's working. So I would say, you know, to local newsrooms who are struggling to kind of adapt in this new world of technology and stuff, that's a great place to start. It's a great way to do it. In terms of, I think this was sort of a two-part question on your part about like the sentiment towards local news. I think there's still very much a desire for it. You know, people maybe just don't know where to look, but especially on social media, people are constantly looking for content that is super relevant to them. Every time I post a video about a small town in Massachusetts, everybody in that town starts sharing it. It makes all the neighborhood Facebook groups and everyone's putting it up in their story because to them, it's like, this is a story about me. This is for me. This is so me. So there is a hunger and an appetite out there for relevant local journalism. And I think it's, why not? Everybody should be doing it.
Do they recognize you? You talk about people recognizing you. Like, do you get the sense that they know you're with WBZ, like you're a radio reporter, or do they think of you in line with all those other people that they just see on TikTok, on social media?
No, you know, some people know my name. Other people say, oh, you're the WBZ News Radio TikTok guy. And that's fine. So yeah, people definitely associate me with WBZ, which is cool and obviously great for the station. Absolutely. You know, that's the goal. And I have that big giant microphone too that says WBZ.
Right, you're a walking billboard.
It's kind of hard to miss. Yeah.
Absolutely. Awesome. Well, Matt, well, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you for taking the time. We've talked about TikTok, Alexa. What's the easiest way for people who maybe aren't familiar with your work, if they want to go down a rabbit hole, where's the best place for them to start?
Sure. So if TikTok's your jam, it's WBZ News Radio. Same thing on Instagram, but if you want to go directly to see my story specifically, I'm Reporter Matt on Instagram.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, thank you again. This has been a ton of fun. I'm excited to see whatever comes next. Maybe we'll run into each other on the streets of Back Bay at some point.
I'd love that, Jacob. Just be prepared to say something interesting.
I'll work on it. I'll try to have a few things queued up.
Get some lines in the back pocket so you can pull out ready.
Exactly,
ready to go.
Exactly. And I'll make sure to, you know, make sure my hair is combed properly and all that too. You never know these days.
Oh my gosh, I know, it's so funny. I'll meet somebody, they'll give me a great line, they'll be like, oh my gosh, I look so bad, can you not use that? Nobody cares.
That's the beauty of radio too, right?
I get it.
Thanks again to my guest, Matt Shearer. Take a Joke is sponsored by Funny Girls, a program from the Harnish Foundation that uses improv education to strengthen girls' leadership skills. Take a Joke is a series from the Sunday Long Read podcast, an audio extension of the Sunday Long Read newsletter. Since 2014, the SLR has curated the very best journalism every week and drops in your inbox every Sunday morning. Did we mention it's free? You can find us and find out more at www.sundaylongread.com. Subscribe to the Sunday Long Read podcast on Spotify or Apple to make sure you don't miss a single episode. This episode is produced by Alex Fuse. The executive producer of this podcast is Etienne Lajoie, and the founders of the Sunday Long Read are Don Van Natta Jr. and me, Jacob Feldman. Thanks for listening, and we hope you join us again next week.